Well, if you've noticed a theme lately, I think to Coast AM, it's this ongoing exploration of what's happening to our economy, what's happening to our society, what is our destiny here as we're approaching 2012 and beyond. And however you look at it, I think one more conversation is what we're always looking for. One more great clarifying conversation that will help make it all make sense. I think tonight is going to be that conversation coming up on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. I've been looking forward to the show for a while. Coming up in about an hour, we'll talk with Greg Hunter. You might recognize the name if you saw his face by clicking on to coasttocoastam.com and linking up to him from there. You might recognize his face as well. He is the reporter that used to work for Good Morning America. He used to be on regularly on ABC and CNN. And then he started a website called USA Watchdog. And at USA Watchdog, he's given a fairly a consistent analysis that has proven to be true time and time again of economic news. And he's driving it right up the middle. There's a mistake we're making, I think, in thinking that one party or the other can preserve our way of life, that one party can do something with the economy that the other party can't do. And depending on where you are politically, it's, you know, the other people are the poison and your people are the ones that are going to be the messiahs. But what Greg Hunter is saying, and we'll let him make his case for himself coming up, but I think what's so interesting about it is what he's saying is that the crime crosses over parties. There is no one group of people that has a greater grasp on the economy. And the reason why we're going to be looking at future economic problems, it's not because of politics, but it's simply because of numbers. We can make the mistake in thinking that we can preserve a particular way of life just by pumping more money into the economy, or make the mistake that if we don't pump money into the economy, that everything is just going to chug along just fine. Well, we've got some bigger fissures than that. And there's a reason why we're where we are, and it isn't because one party or the other party has been in charge for 4 years, 8 years, 6 years, whatever your local situation is. And Greg Hunter will tell us what those bigger problems are, and hopefully what might still be opportunities to fix them. Well, maybe fix is too grand a term. Maybe at least start to heal them and hope that it ends with a fix. But that's coming up next hour. Greg Hunter from USA Watchdog, because he says there has been a crime of the century that's been committed, foreclosure gate. And that a lot of people have gotten hugely rich off of the fact that we're not paying attention to it. He can explain why this happened, who did it, and we'll talk about the insanity or the ingenuity of what is being foisted upon the American people right now. We'll talk about that coming up next hour. We'll have open lines between now and then. And did you hear the good news about how smart you are? Coming up next on Coast to Coast, this is Ian Punnett. All right, so coming up then, the USA Watchdog himself, Greg Hunter, will explain the crime that's being committed right now and about all of this money that's just about to be printed and pumped into the economy. It's not a good idea. And it's not going to get us what we think it is, or maybe it will, and that's the scary part. We'll get to that coming up next hour on Coast to Coast. Open lines in just a minute. I have a question for you. If you were entirely free to plan your evening and had no commitments the next day, at what time would you choose to go to bed? Got an answer for that in your head, what that time is? All right, just think about that for a second. What time would you choose to go to bed? Starting at like 8 p.m., or would it be later than that? I mean, if you had nothing going on tomorrow, you could sleep as long as you want. And then while you're thinking about that, think about this other sort of lifestyle choice that you might be making for yourself. If you have to do 2 hours of physically hard work, if you were entirely free to plan your day, which of the following periods would you choose to do the work? If you had 2 hours of physically hard labor that you had to do, would you choose to do it from 8 a.m. until 10 p.m.? Or, sorry, 8 a.m. until 10 a.m., 11 a.m. until 1 p.m., 3 until 5 in the afternoon, or from 7 until 9? There's a reason why I'm asking you these questions. It's a part of a quiz that's online. It's in a link to a story at coasttocoastam.com about whether or not you're a night owl or a morning lark. So it's a series of questions, and you'll find your what they call your chronotype. Are you a night owl or a morning lark? Now, you might think, well, I'm listening right now, so I must be a night owl. Maybe not. Maybe it's, you know, maybe there are circumstances that lead you to be working at night more. Maybe you've got other sleeping issues like I do. Maybe you don't think you're either. But when you actually sit down and answer some of these questions, like for some reason you have to go to bed several hours later than normal, but there is no need to get up at a particular time the next morning, which of the following is most likely to occur? You'll wake up at the usual time and not fall asleep again. We'll wake up at the usual time and then doze. We'll wake up at the usual time, but we'll fall asleep again. We'll not wake up until later than usual. So, you know, go take this quiz and find out whether or not you're a night owl or a morning lark, because what they're determining is that night owls are smarter. They have a higher IQ than those people who are, you know, kind of traditional mavens of daylight. So if you find yourself working at night, there may be a reason. It may be because you're drawn to night work. It could be because you have a higher IQ and you need to be in this place, even if you didn't think you were naturally a night person. And then the larger question exists, and you can kick this around too if you want to, in open lines on Coast to Coast, is are there any other reasons why you think people who stay up at night are smarter? People who can't get to sleep, people who, you know, who have, I don't know if we want to say, people who do their best work at midnight. Why is that so? Because for the first time in history, higher IQs are reported by nighttime people than daytime people. Something's going on, and scientists are just beginning to figure it out. If you know the numbers, go ahead and grab one right now. If not, wait till the bottom of the hour. We'll run them for you. You can also always find the phone numbers at coasttocoastam.com. Maybe while you're taking that quiz. West of the Rockies, David is in Spokane on Coast to Coast. David?
Yes, Ian. I had a couple of good ideas for you and your guest and for the audience about the deficit and the government in general. I was listening to the news about, Obama was asking for like $129 million for safety inspectors after this Gulf oil blow-up. And then also there was something in the news that because of some of the coal mining disaster, the Congress wanted to have more safety inspectors for the coal mines. And I was just thinking, now, why is it that the government has to appropriate money for all these inspections? Because what the government should be doing is having these safety inspections and environmental inspections, and then after the inspectors come out there, they just send these companies the bill.
Well, fair enough. Yeah, I mean, if that's the way the law is written and you can force a company to pay for that, sure.
Well, I don't know if the law is written that way, but I tell you, it doesn't seem fair, because you and me, when we have to get our car checked, smog checked, we have to pay a fee to get it smog checked. You know what I mean? For the environment.
I don't work in that kind of the sector of the economy. So I'm not sure that they don't have that kind of thing now in one aspect or another, but I have to say I've never heard of it. So maybe they don't. Maybe somebody's got the answer for that coming up on Coast to Coast. That's a beautiful thing about open lines. Thanks, David. What I can say is that's a very small piece of obviously some of our problems. I mean, that kind of money, as much as it'd be nice not to waste any money, that's nothing compared to the kind of money that's getting wasted right now. This foreclosure gate may be the near perfect crime. I mean, and then we're talking about such a huge part of our economy and the way that people are lining their pockets from it. And we may never be able to know exactly who it is, too, that's benefiting from foreclosure gate. This is a massive moving of paper, and it's taking bad debt. It's making it worse while other people profit from it. And in the end, we hold the not good part. Minnie is in northern Kentucky, some of the most beautiful parts of the United States are in Kentucky. Hey, Minnie.
And the scariest. I don't live far from Wilder.
Oh, fun. Good. I like scary, so that doesn't bother me.
Well, you know Bobby Mackey. Anyway,
yeah, I know.
What I wanted to call about was I've been teaching myself Spanish, and I read this in a Hispanic newspaper, something that I haven't heard anywhere except in this little article where they had the cholera epidemic in Haiti.
Right.
Before the rains came, when it just was in the rural area.
Yeah.
Here it said that there were these, in this article, it said there were these United Nations soldiers from Nepal. And what happened was, it looked like a little creek, but actually it was the mouth of a river. And these soldiers, and I can't understand why they would do this, were actually defecating at the mouth of this creek. And that's, in the article, it said that cholera is an endemic to Nepal. And that's what poisoned the water, because the people in this rural area, you know, it didn't make any sense why all of a sudden they got cholera, but 300 people died. And then when the storm came, it, you know, started to gush into Port-au-Prince. But mm-hmm. I don't understand why nothing has ever been said outside of, you know, me being able to read an article in Spanish.
Okay, well, I'll give you some good news. That was actually reported by Reuters, the international news agency.
About the soldiers, you mean?
Yep, because it was an allegation that these UN peacekeepers had done this, that they were the source. The UN, and I can't remember when the story cleared, uh-huh. So I couldn't give you a headline or a date, but it's sometime within the beginning of the month.
I read it last week.
Did you? Okay, so let's say first couple of days of the month that the that they said, the UN said this was a rumor. That this is,
it wasn't a rumor. It had a photo, and these people had this big suctioning machine, and they had masks over their faces. It was horrible. I mean, you could tell they were in misery trying to clean this up.
Well, all I can do is to tell you what was in the news story. So, I mean, I understand you read that in the mm-hmm. in the Spanish language newspaper, but they.
I had the photo.
Well, I got that part. I'm just saying is that what they're saying is that lots of people are using the water in Haiti, and have been for a long time. As both a toilet and a source of drinking water. So unfortunately, there was a lot of that was going around. Let me see if I can't find that story real quickly, because it doesn't sound, maybe I'm not getting the exact wording right, and that might help. But I did see that story in Reuters. I read Reuters. A friend of mine works for Reuters, so I go to their website a lot, and I did see that story. Especially Reuters does a lot of international news, and they were talking about it. But I'll pull that up here in just a second. First time caller line, John is in Nashville on Coast to Coast. John?
Hi, Ian. How are you doing?
Doing all right. Open lines.
Yeah, this is John calling. I'm listening on 1510 WLAC here in Nashville.
It's a great old station.
I wanted to... you know, I really enjoy listening to you as a host. I love your insightful comments and how you challenge some of the guests. But, you know, I wondered, what was your personal take on the Ghost Adventures crew? I heard you interview them a few weekends ago. And
right.
What do you think of the show? And do you think any of that is staged, or do you
well,
think it's real stuff?
I came at that with the I've watched the show a lot. So of all of the ghost shows, that's probably the show that I've seen the most. I don't know how they compare so well to the other shows out there. I did ask them about that a little bit, and I told them without trying to taint the interview much with that, I wanted to give them a chance to sort of explain some of what I perceive as a little bit of over dramatic kind of reactions to things. But I was impressed by their sincerity. And the more I read about them, the more I got the feeling that even if they, in the moment of being locked into these places, like, you know, the these empty hospitals and hotels and stuff in the basement, even if they overreact, that at least it's an overreaction that is appropriate to the moment that they are locked in a dark basement in a supposedly haunted hotel. So, I mean, I can't say whether anything's staged, and I actually didn't bother to ask them that, because if it is, they wouldn't say it is. If it wasn't, they would say it wasn't. So I didn't bother with that question. But I was impressed, I thought, with the way in which they talked like guys who are seriously exploring the subject. And they didn't come off as, I didn't think they came off as con men. How about you?
Well, I really enjoy the show. A caller a few callers ago mentioned Bobby Mackey's Music World. I think that's one of the best episodes on the show. And, you know, I think one of the guys got actually scratched during that episode, like a physical effect on the body. So, you know, I really enjoy it. I watch it.
How about the floating brick episode, the famous floating brick piece from Ghost Adventures?
Which one was that?
The one where the brick flies when they're in a basement. Have you ever seen that one?
I don't think I've seen that one.
I'll tell you what.
I enjoyed the one. It was on an island in Italy.
Well, I don't think I saw that one. But I tell you what, if you go online and Google Ghost Adventures Flying Brick, that part, it's been interesting to see people vet that piece on whether or not that really did happen. And there are people that claim to be able to have recreated it on YouTube. So there's a lot of that kind of discussion going on that's worthy of it. I will say this, they're very entertaining guys. And if I'm watching the show, main thing for me is, am I entertained? And the secondary thing to that is, am I believing everything I'm seeing? I let my critical mind step in there too. But John, thank you for that thought. It's always good to hear from people down in Nash, Vegas. Joe is in Phoenix on Coast to Coast. Hey, Joe.
Yes, sure I am. Thank you, Ian, for taking my call. What I'd like to say is about last night's show. You know, Randy Weaver, Jerry Spence took Randy Weaver's case to court and sued the government for wrongful death.
Mm-hmm.
And the government settled out of court for $3 million.
And should have. And they should have. It was the Randy Weaver got some money, and then his daughters each got $1 million. Yep.
Yeah. And this, I think the federal government basically admitted guilt
They did admit guilt. I mean, they didn't basically admit guilt. They admitted guilt. I mean, there is no doubt about it that they blew that. And there was what Joe's talking about is our guest last night. It was Gary Noesner was the FBI's chief hostage negotiator. And he wrote about Ruby Ridge, although he wasn't there. He was on vacation. As the FBI chief negotiator, he was in contact with the people that were involved, and he wrote about it. He's not an apologist at all for what the government did there, right?
Yeah, right. I understand. But at any rate, on the other thing on Waco, there's an attorney by the name of Linda Thompson.
Okay, don't even get started with her. That whole video and all that. I was over with that 10 years ago. That's a fraud.
I think people ought to watch that video.
No, I don't think they ought to watch it because it's full of lies, I think.
It's full of inaccuracies.
It's full of inaccuracies. I'll just say that. The things that she says on that, I don't believe are true. And I'm just not even going to go down that road. I think what he said was actually, I think what Gary Noesner wrote in the book, I think that was very informative. To stand outside and to analyze tape and to do, I watched that video back and forth, and I've seen it many times. I don't happen to agree with it, so I'll just say it's full of inaccuracies. And I thought it was very interesting. If you want to know what happened at Waco, go read what Gary Noesner wrote about the conflicts they were having on the FBI side between those people who were in the hostage rescue team that wanted to go in with guns blazing to get people out. They wanted to go in with tear gas, essentially, and flush people out that way. Go take a look at that. I mean, that part was very interesting. But the idea was to get more people out, was not to go in and kill them all, like that woman asserts in the video, that somehow that was their motive, was to go in and kill them. And I didn't believe it when I saw her do it on the video, and I do believe Gary Noesner in his new book. We talked about it last night, Stalling for Time. If you didn't go back, you can catch that in Coast Insider. More open lines coming up next on Coast to Coast. All right, so we're open lines before we get to Greg Hunter, USA Watchdog, coming up next hour on Coast to Coast. Greg Hunter says, be very afraid of this $600 billion currency dump that's going to be coming up. And he also says that there are many crimes that are being committed right now, almost perfect crime, near perfect crimes, because you know it's going on. You know that somebody's benefiting, but you may not be able to tell exactly who. We know how. Foreclosure gate. We'll get to that coming up next hour on Coast to Coast. But in open lines last half hour, the subject came up about a story about UN peacekeepers from Nepal as the source of a cholera epidemic in Haiti. Now, this story ran on Reuters. I don't know if you saw it. It was a wire piece last week. The claim is, and it you know, for all we know, it could end up being true, but the claim was that these soldiers had been using upstream waters for their toilet, and as a result, it created the cholera epidemic. But there have been tests done on the cholera strain, and then they cross-typed them to those Nepalese soldiers, and they could not find any soldiers that had that strain. Now, the problem with this, though, and this is part of what feeds the rumors that it was created by these UN peacekeeping soldiers from Nepal, is that the strain of cholera that's found in Haiti is not native to Haiti. So that it was brought in by somebody, it would seem, and that particular strain of cholera, they say, can be tracked to that part of the world, so South Asia. So because it comes from that part of the country, it's one of the part of the world, that's what they're saying, it may be the Nepalese soldiers. But the UN and other people did testing of soldiers and the bathroom facilities around the where the Nepalese soldiers were, these UN peacekeeping soldiers, and they couldn't find any evidence of the cholera being there, and that they test these soldiers before they deploy. And I think that's part of the key. You can't, I mean, they would have known that they were carrying the cholera, they say, and that's why they believe that it wasn't them. Now, does this mean it still was one of them, or that somebody somehow got through the cracks? I don't know. It's an interesting story, but it's feeding this paranoia about the UN peacekeeping soldiers there, and that the local Haitians now are, in some cases, resisting the help from the UN. And it's not like, you know, I mean, I realize there's a lot of people who have some real hard feelings toward the UN. I understand that. But they need help in Haiti, and it's not going to help if they can't trust anybody. And look what happened when the hurricane was coming in. They were saying, you folks have to get out of these shacks. You have to get out of these makeshift shelters. You're going to get clobbered by this hurricane. And if there is no acceptance of any kind of authoritative data, if every time everybody says something, everybody else out there says no, I'm afraid it's just going to lead to more disasters. Haiti is such chaos anyway. Just had some friends who got back from there on a mission trip, and boy, gosh, they said there is nothing, there's so much to do, and there's so few people there actually doing it. The last thing you want to see, I think, are fewer people there doing it. But in the meantime, back to open lines coming up next. But that's the rest of that soldier. On Coast to Coast, this is Ian Punnett. Wildcard line, Kristen is in Seattle on Coast to Coast. Kristen?
Hi, Ian. How's it going?
Hi. Good, and you?
Great. This is my first time calling in. I'm kind of nervous. I've never called into such a big radio show before. But first of all, you guys are great. I love this show. My husband and I are huge fans, and all you hosts are just so polite to all the guests, and we really appreciate that.
Try to be. Certainly try to be.
No kidding. But the reason I'm calling is because my husband and I, we've been listening to you guys on the same station in Seattle for over a year now, and we just tuned in here within the last couple of days, and you guys completely disappeared off the air. And I was just wondering if any of your other callers are experiencing the same kind of trend going on.
Oh, I don't know.
Around.
So is it a Seattle thing? It's just the, like, a, it could be transmitter maintenance or something, and they've got us on lower power? Or do they take it off the air completely?
So far, the last time I tuned into your station, or to the station you guys are usually on 570, it's just been this weird jazz music.
Oh, gosh. Well, you know, I don't know. It's possible that we're moving to another affiliate. Where are you catching the show then tonight?
I haven't been able to catch it. I have an internet connection at work, but I'm not really using it to listen to the radio.
Right. I understand that. Well, remember, too, that iPhone app is always handy for Coast to Coast, too. Kristen, I don't know anything about it. That's interesting. Maybe we're switching affiliates. I'll see if I can't get an answer before the top of the hour. Or maybe it's just something else beyond our control. Annie's in Alabama, Coast to Coast. Roll Tide. Big day today for Alabama. Hey, Annie.
Thank you for letting me on, Ian. I was a student at the University of Alabama where they tested my IQ several times. They weren't satisfied. They thought something was wrong, and they retested me, and they said I was a genius, the guy with a PhD there in the department where they do that testing for students.
Right.
He congratulated, said I'm a genius. So he said my IQ is measurably high, so I can answer your question why night owls tend to have a higher IQ.
And that is why?
It's because people, a lot of people with a very high IQ, like me, feel compelled to wait until after midnight when others are asleep so that we can enjoy the full benefit of the quiet and the lack of distraction. And during the day, sometimes I tell people, be quiet, you're breaking my concentration. And most of my inventions, musical composition, and artwork were all done after midnight.
Well, that's interesting. And so what did you do with this gift you were given?
I try to use every gift.
Yeah. Like what are the inventions, some of the things you've come up with?
Some of those energy-related things I was telling you about before, and I can concentrate better on my studies when it's quiet at night.
Oh,
I've invented,
good.
I have dozens of inventions now that are energy-related where you can, for very little input, you can get a lot of output, a lot of wattage.
Well, good.
Totally free energy, but go ahead.
Well, no, we need as much of that as we can, so keep up your good work, and we'll be here to keep you company while you're fixing our problems, and I mean that sincerely. Matt is in Philadelphia on Coast to Coast. Open lines. Matt?
Hi. Hello?
Hey. Hi.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. At first, I just want to give you guys a compliment over the past couple of weeks with the guests that you guys have had on dealing with the economic situation.
I think you're going to like tonight's guest, too, on this quite a bit.
Yeah, I'm actually looking forward to that. It's actually, I want to call in later, but I probably want to get through. But I just kind of want to make a quick general statement about, I think if you, like, take a step and look back, like, the number one problem is really just the lack of financial education in this country. Just for an example, I mean, I'm 25, and it wasn't until my sophomore year in college where I was studying business, and I was taking economic classes and stuff, that I started just to realize just how much, I didn't know about how things work, just simple things like credit cards and all this stuff. And
right.
It just seems strange to me that as a society where, everything is based around know, going to work, making money and stuff, and just the lack of knowledge that people have when it comes to simple things like credit cards and mortgages and how all this stuff actually works. And, you know, 5 years ago, you asked somebody, you know, who was the chairman of the Federal Reserve, you know, they look at you with a blank stare. So to me, well, that just seems like the major problem.
Well, maybe. I mean, I think the one thing that actually people probably knew was Greenspan. That was probably one, if there was one name that could jump out at them, it would have been that. But I think I think what's interesting too, and I don't know whether how much, I'm not as well educated on the economy as I'd like to be, but part of my confusion just as a everyday person is that even the economists can't agree. You know, you've got your camps, you've got your, your
Keynesians.
You got your Keynesians who are out there always talking to macroeconomics and other people talking, no, that's all wrong. And so, you know, I think that's part of the conflict, too, is if the people at the very top, the people with the PhDs can't agree, then there's a sense of despair, I think, that comes over the rest of us, or at least a sense of, well, okay, you know, what we'll leave it up to the people who are, you know, wearing the powdered wigs to decide that, because we can't somehow seem to get a grip of it here on the lower levels. But
I agree with that. And it's almost like, you know, those two camps that you just said, the Keynesian and the Austrian, it's almost like a religion in and of itself.
Yeah, exactly. I think you hit on it right there. It's like hearing people debate Christianity. You know, it's like hearing people debate a Catholic or a Protestant. And it's like after a while, you just kind of tune it out. And so I think that's where some of the economists have got to do a better job of that. But I appreciate your thought. And we'll get to that coming up, too. We'll try to make it make sense in just a few minutes where no matter where you are in your education level on the economy, we'll try and make it very clear. Gene is in South Jersey on Coast to Coast. Gene?
Hey, George. How you doing? I'm a good friend of mine through the amateur radio. But getting back to Waco, I can remember the days when I first started. There was three amateur operators in Waco itself broadcasting on 14290 what was going on and that stuff.
Yeah.
So, you know, I see more of that coming.
What's that?
More of these type things, because there's a lot of people out there that are in situations where they have 20 people living in one building and the government don't like it, what they're doing or whatever.
Well, I don't want to be contrary here, Gene, but actually nothing's happened like that since Waco.
Oh, I know that.
But anyway, there's a reason why. And that's what we got into last night with our guest, Gary Nestner, about what was really going on behind the scenes. And part of what leads up to Waco is not some, you know, government intent to keep people from living together or, you know, trying to stop communes, but it was rethinking completely how something like that can be avoided. And so there have been other confrontations. There have been other times when the government has had confrontations with groups one way or another, but they've learned to diffuse them before they elevate into something like that.
Okay, one question about, October 30th or so, I sent you a couple emails. I don't think you got, because I never heard you announce it. In the city of Denver, Colorado, they had on their ballot, which was defeated, this is the second or third time they've tried it, a UFO research center they wanted to build in Colorado, in Denver. Mm-hmm. It was on their ballot and it got defeated again. Did you ever get my email?
If you sent it to George, I didn't. That may account for why I didn't get that. But, you know, it's always easier to these days, Facebook. Keeping up with the email became untenable. I poke my head in there from time to time. But I do read the posts that people put on the Facebook page. And there's a new Coast to Coast Facebook page, too. In fact, if you go to the website, coasttocoastam.com, there's a story posted up about the new Coast fan page. And so it's easy to keep track of the stories that are coming up this week. For example, all the shows that, you know, are usually already listed on the website, they're also on the Facebook fan page. But it's a little bit easier for you to interact. You can take some polls that are up there. You go to coasttocoastam.com and then find out how to link up to the Facebook page. If you're not a Facebook, you know, member, it's really not a big deal. Just there's two things you need to do before you join the Coast to Coast fan page on Facebook. Go see the movie The Social Network, and then just sign up at Facebook. The Social Network remains a very good movie this fall. It helps explain just what Facebook really is. And then just join up because it's free and it's simple. And it's that way you can post your messages and everybody can read them. Jack, on a wild card line, as we're running out of time, but I think we can get one or two more in. Jack?
Hey, good morning. I wonder if you think that Pope John Paul I was murdered.
Yeah, it's a very interesting theory. I read the book that came out at the time on that, and it made a strong claim that he was poisoned, and that he was taken out because he was doing something that they did. They wanted him to be kind of a placeholder pope. They just wanted to bring him in and just have him kind of hang out. They wanted somebody who was kind of a do-nothing pope, was the claim, and that he was already deciding to not go along with that program. What do you think about it?
I think he was murdered, but only because he wasn't going to make the changes of Vatican II fast enough.
I don't know that that was the claim. I thought that it was kind of the opposite. For example, the thought was for Vatican II, I mean, especially for Vatican II, is he was actually sort of turning out to be kind of a surprise liberal. In many ways, and that the original John Paul, not John Paul II, was already entertaining the idea of divesting some things which the Vatican was into financially, that he didn't want to be a part of, that they were, he might have been reconsidering some long-held traditional views, and that angered the wrong people. That's the claim about the first John Paul. And I don't know whether that book has ever been, I don't know whether the response has been to that book over time. I just remember I read it. I think it's just called like Who Killed the Pope or Who Killed John Paul I or Was John Paul the First Murdered or something like that. But whatever it was great. It was really convincing. I think they've had commissions on that since then to determine that it's not true, but then we might expect that from any organization. First-time caller line, Max is in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Max?
Hey, Ian, how you doing? Thank you for taking my call.
Glad to get you in.
I'm a first-time caller and listener from Harvard University. My dorm mates and I are tuning in, and we'd like to revisit that Night Owl intelligence bit.
But okay, actually, tell us what.
Actually, first, I think we'd all agree that we'd like the genius caller from a few calls ago to come help us with our homework so we can go to sleep here. But
you could do worse, I'm sure. So have you seen The Social Network, by the way?
We saw it, yeah. We had to laugh at some parts because it's not filmed at Harvard, so we got a kick out of that.
I wondered about that because I thought that's always funny when they're claiming something. Like, I was watching some Jackie Chan movie, and I love the movie, but it's supposedly taking place in Brooklyn. And you look in the background, and there's these huge mountains. I thought, okay, that's not Brooklyn. But anyway.
Right. No, it was great. But anyway, so about the intelligence thing, we think that this notion that night owls are smarter could be related to an increased level of intelligence necessary to fight this natural desire to sleep when it's dark out. You know, for example, thousands of years, humans have been programmed to sleep when the sun goes down. And so perhaps even with this artificial light we now have, it might take, I don't know, a greater level of cognitive ability to buck the trend.
Well, part of that, though, it sort of bucks common sense. I mean, the thought was that you were risking the most by being up at night and out at night. That's when you were at peril was at its greatest. So now that's what that may reflect is that's just no longer true, that you just aren't. It's not dangerous to be up at night, and that may just be part of it. It's just sort of an overall, because we live in a safer society. Whereas if you go to other parts of the world where it's still really dangerous to be at night, common sense is go to bed. There's no sense of being out wandering around. Well, guys, glad to have you out there. I hope maybe you can help us then all make sense of what's coming up next. USA Watchdog Greg Hunter, former reporter for ABC Network and for CNN. And coming up in just a few minutes, he'll talk about the crime that's being committed right now, the near-perfect crime, or heck, maybe just go ahead and say it is the perfect crime. We'll talk about foreclosure gate as well, as it's being called, and just how you'll be paying for this in the long run. Insanity or ingenuity? Maybe a little of both next on Coast to Coast.